Welcome to the Rosenbox,
where dancers go for show prep and candid chat. I'm Claire Kretschmar.
And I'm Aron Sands, and we are dancers with New York City Ballet. Welcome to a new episode of the Rosenbox. Hi, Claire.
Hey, Aron.
Love your outfit. Love your outfit. Very fitted for the topic today.
Yeah, I wore a fashionable outfit so that we can adequately talk about fashion, costuming. It's helping me already.
Yeah. You're in character.
Yeah. Wearing a Kelly Green skirt. Right, Kelly Green?
I would say it's Kelly Green.
Some kind of like heirloom winter sweater.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to describe it.
Okay, back on track. Back on track. So we're going to talk about the costume shop and specifically interview Mark Happel, who's the director of costumes. And the costume shop is really important to New York City Ballet, and I would even say
to the ballet world.
To the ballet world in general, because, you know, when you see a ballet, you don't just see the body. You see the body in something.
Yeah.
I mean,
the first thing you see is what the dancers are wearing, what the dancers look like.
Yeah, yeah. When you're an audience member, you're registering the dancer in the costume.
Yeah.
And costumes for ballet also have to be able to do practical things. They can't just look beautiful.
They have to also feel beautiful.
They have to feel beautiful. They have to feel comfortable enough to be able to do all of these crazy moves that we do. And the role of the costume designer and the costume shop was always important to New York City Ballet founder George Balanchine. And he worked closely with Barbara Kurinska, who in 1964, they were both able to receive the benefits of this big Ford Foundation grant, which enabled Barbara Kurinska, to officially be rooted at New York City Ballet and be the head of the costume shop and to grow this business in conjunction with growing the ballets that George Balanchine was making. Because prior to that, I think Barbara Kurinska was, you know, doing various work. And then in 1964, she was able to make New York City Ballet her first and foremost goal. Anyway, so it's always been important since the inception of New York City Ballet. And even Balanchine said that he attributes 50% of the success of the ballets to the costumes and to Barbara Kurinska.
And as humble as that sounds, rightly so, because the costumes, I would say, are just as iconic as the ballet choreography and the music.
I know costume designers are frequently looking to Kurinska's designs for inspiration.
Yeah, studying and inspiration.
Yeah, and some of the things that I love about those costumes is that she put details, these little details. Sometimes it was like memorabilia of, like, I think in the Nutcracker, the hot chocolate costume with the image of either Lincoln Kirstein or George Balanchine in the costume, like a real photograph of it in the costume. And just little details, too, like the placement of certain jewels and the kinds of fabrics that were used. So anyway, yeah, these designs have been the source of inspiration for others, and also just great joy for dancers to behold and to like be, to live in for the ballets.
Absolutely.
Also, she invented the powder puff tutu.
Yes, which we'll get into it once our guest arrives, because we want to hear from the inside. We want to get to know and understand the difference between a regular tutu, a classical plate tutu, and the powder puff tutu.
Yeah, so it's very cool that New York City Ballet has that connection and that legacy of this different kind of tutu that I know that a lot of, again, dancers and designers really appreciate.
And continue to create legacy as the costume shop, you know, continues to work relentlessly on new choreography. Now more than ever, I feel like really pushing for new choreographers, new work all the time, not just during our iconic fall fashion gala, but all year round, and having Alexei Rumansky and Justin Pegg as our resident choreographers, I know they're constantly working on new costumes, as well as reconstructing older productions or costumes that they have gotten to the time to they need to be redone, or even at times redesign.
Yeah, there's so many Yeah.
Yeah, there's a different a processes. Lot of hats yeah. are worn.
Yeah, different processes to get a costume to the stage. Mm-hmm. And Ram, what is your experience with the costume shop, or what is a typical dancer's mm-hmm. experience?
Okay, so for the dancers, if you have an official costume fitting for a costume at the Rose Building, your time for the appointment will appear in the schedule of that day on mm-hmm. the very top. So you will have a long list of names with a time, and that's when you need to show up. Usually they're about 15 minutes. And for the most part, they're scheduled between rehearsals. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to miss much of work, but sometimes you do might have to, like, if you're understudying a ballet or even the ballets that you're in, you might have to leave for 10, 15 minutes to work on whatever costume they're working on. But yeah, we don't only just get fitted at the theater in our wardrobe department, but as I said, at the Rose Building at the official costume shop.
Yeah, which is, yeah, so the Rose Building is just across Lincoln Center, yes. across from our theater, and that's where
at the plaza.
The costume shop is.
Yes.
I mean, and it's part of our work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the fact that it's on our schedule is just like a part of our job as dancers is to be on time for your fitting at mm-hmm. the costume shop, which will enable, again, the efficient creation of these costumes.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were going to describe maybe fitting.
Different people from the costume shop team will be there. And sometimes if you're part of a new ballet with a designer, the designer themselves will be there. And that's always a very exciting fitting because you really see the vision come to life and the masters at work where they're really trying to maybe try different fabrics or different fittings or even different costumes. They sometimes don't know exactly which costume is going to go to mm-hmm. what dancer. So you're trying a few different things. And it's always a really cool experience, first of all, to get to meet the designer and also to see them work. And there's no much you can do at times. You're just like standing there and it's all about how they see it on you. But it's actually very nice when they do get to ask your feedback on how it feels. Can you move? What are some of the steps that you have to do? To make sure you're able to do them and to do them comfortably. I really like that. And as we'll hear from Mark, part of their job is like to make you comfortable, to allow you to do what you have to do on the stage while still be able to achieve the vision of the designer. They have always appreciate feedback on whatever I had to say on the feeling of the costume. And that helps a lot. Because at times when you're part of a new ballet, it's an exciting time, but it can be challenging because all this new choreography that is being created on you, it's some sort of heavy weight that you are really conscious about your work during those times. So in addition to the pressure of something being created on you and wanting to be really good and present those steps and the choreography and do justice to the choreographer, you sometimes have, you know, you work on the choreography for way longer than the costume, I would say.
At least for us.
For us.
For
as the dancers.
Yeah.
As the dancers, you will work on the piece for like months and maybe like weeks prior to the premiere. That's when we start working on like costumes.
Yeah.
So, again, you've been working a lot on the choreography aspect of it, and you don't know what your costume is going to look like. So it's an added layer, no pun intended, to the process when then you see your costume, and then you either, you can love it immediately, or you can, it could add, as I said, an extra layer of something to think about while you're dancing.
Yeah, because sometimes you're like, oh, this movement is so easy in my leotard. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, but you actually are going to have a big train in the back and then a poofy sleeves.
Yeah, and an upside down tutu.
Upside down tutu. And then you're like, oh, gosh, can I do my steps in this? But then that's where you have this conversation with the designer and the people who are, fixing up your costume to just say, hey, I actually do this somersault in the ballet.
I can't wear this upside down tutu.
So anyway, but it's a really exciting process. And I remember really enjoying going to the costume shop. There's something very...
It's like, a she glamorous.
Yes, I was going to say, it's like glamorous experience. To go to the costume shop and you have people, you know, fixing the different layers of the fabric on you and they ask you what you think and you're like, oh my goodness, you care.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, but it's a really exciting process. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to hearing from Mark. He has a lot of experience at the New York City Ballet Costume Shop. So here we go.
Yeah.
Welcome, Mark Happel, to the Rosin Box. We're happy to talk to you today about being the director of costumes at New York City Ballet and what that role entails. And before we do so, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to be here at New York City Ballet as the director of costumes?
Sure. I moved to New York City in 1978, and I immediately started working with Bob Fosse on a musical called Dancin'. And then from that, just basically worked in on Broadway and off-Broadway for, a few decades. Had my own shop, ran that for a while, worked for another shop called Barbara Matera Limited, which was basically the Broadway costume shop. And they also were the shop, since it was a few floors up from ABT, that did all of ABT's costumes, as well as Barbara running New York City Ballet's costume shop for a while. She co-ran it and ran her own shop, which is kind of amazing that she did that. So I became very familiar with New York City Ballet because we did do a lot of city ballet productions, especially the full lengths. And from there, I was offered a job at the Metropolitan Opera House, where I went and ran the men's department for about 6 years. And then suddenly got a phone call from Ken Tabachnik, who was the general manager of City Ballet at that time, asking if I'd come in to interview for the job of director of costumes here. They were interviewing four people. Peter had decided that it was time to move on to a new director of costumes. So after about 3 weeks of talking to Ken and talking to Peter, I was offered the job and, of course, took it. And probably one of the best moves I ever made, because it is a one-of-a-kind job here in the city, in the country, basically, you know, working for City Ballet, which is a company that is, you know, at the top of the heap. And so the costume department is as well. So gladly took it on. And that was about almost 20 years ago. So here I am.
Wow. Congratulations on such a longstanding career with New York City Ballet. And yeah. Again,
very impressive. Also, I love that you didn't go searching for it. You got a phone call.
Yeah.
They came searching for you.
I remember very well. I was in the fitting room at the Metropolitan Opera, and I got a phone call. And it was like, hi, this is Ken Tabachnik. We'd love to talk to you about becoming the director of costumes here at City Ballet. Would you be interested?
Can you switch theaters?
I know. And I said, sure. And so I spent probably about 3 weeks, because I told them I would only do interviews on my lunch because I didn't want to screw up the Met.
That's
professionalism. There's a lot going on. Yeah.
That's professionalism.
I didn't want to screw up my opportunities there. So I would come over at lunch, just cross the plaza and talk to the people here. And then finally, one day, Ken called me and said, we'd like to offer you the job. So I said, sure, I'm coming over.
And how was that adjustment going from making or designing or editing costumes for the opera and even your other past experience for more Broadway to specifically making dance costumes?
Well, the Met is a big jump because at the Met, it's just so different. It's not about movement because a lot of those opera singers barely move. It's all about their throat. And so you can't have anything anywhere near their throat, the base of their neck. That is the big thing. So that was always a challenge. You also have the challenge of, you know, having an opera singer come in that is between 50 and 60 and, you know, a large person coming in to play a young, handsome prince. So that's always a challenge because it's just like, you know, how do you accommodate the age and the scale and everything to make them look like this young prince or princess. So that was always a challenge. You know, coming over to the City Ballet then, I mean, it was a total turnaround because suddenly it's not about the throat, it's about movement and pure movement and about athletes and about trying to make costumes that can accommodate any kind of movement possible that's thrown at the dancers, at me, you know, at all of us. So that was a real challenge for me.
What do you have to take into consideration in terms of like material and aesthetic for designing or helping designers create costumes for a ballet?
Right. Well, a lot of it is just trying to research stretch fabrics as much as possible. Fortunately, we're in a period now where a lot of fabric companies are making stretch versions of everything. So we have that going for us. You know, there's a lot of the fact that when a dancer comes out on our stage, you know, most of the audience is quite a ways away from them. Plus, stage lights, you can kind of fake things so that you can use a stretch fabric that maybe is not something that a designer would really want to use. I mean, they may want to use, you know, a silk Duchess satin, which is gorgeous and beautiful, but doesn't really move. And so in place of it, we might use jumbo spandex or something like that, something that has the same sheen, but is completely stretchable. So it's like trying to get designers to realize a lot of times that they're used to standing in a room like we're in now, which is small, fitting room or a runway or something with a model. And it's getting them to understand that they're now designing something that is going to be 50, 60, 70 feet away from the audience and in constant movement. So,
yeah, I know something that Aron and I have witnessed in the company is you also have to consider the longevity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of a costume, because it's not cheap to make a costume and to make like 50 or however many are being made. And then you also have to consider longevity in the sense of like the time that the costume will be lived in, but also even...
And how it will be shared.
Exactly. Yes. That's what I was going to say. How it will be shared with other dancers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing. And the sweat factor,
yeah,
which is huge. Because, you know, in theater and the Met, of course, there's a sweat factor, but there's not to the extent that you have in, well, Aron, you know, to the extent that you have in ballet, especially some of our male dancers. To me, they step on the stage and they immediately break into a sweat. So,
well, you guys often have long sleeves, too.
Yes.
You know, it's like a heavier tunic. Anyway.
So it's always kind of dealing with that. But yes, the longevity is something to think about. But also, since I got here, one of my goals was to make costumes that don't have to be shared quite so much. So, like, I feel like the principals and the soloists should have their own costume. I think it just, you know, it says a lot to a principal dancer that they look inside a costume and only their name is in it. Mm. And I think that is, I think, something that our principal dancers deserve, you know, once you get to that level. So that's something I've been working on as well.
Although there is something special when there are a bunch of big names in your tunic or your costume, and then you get to see who's done the role and who you look up to. That's pretty fun always to find out who's worn the costume.
Yeah, definitely. And you
I mean, you know, there's costumes that have like Baryshnikov's name in it, and people are like, no, I don't want a new costume. I want the Baryshnikov one.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, even though it's like a wreck, and it doesn't quite fit, but it is Baryshnikov. So, and I understand totally.
Yeah, he had a good show, so I went with that.
Yeah, and I mean, all of these little things of a costume make a dancer more excited to perform,
right?
Or could make a dancer like less excited to perform. It's crazy how much a costume and
could
the way
affect.
It feels and the history behind it like affects how dancers perform on stage. So
I get the history. I mean, that is important. And, you know, we have bodices that have Suzanne Farrell's name in it. And, you know, all of that kind of thing, a lot of our principals, they love. So, you know, they're like, no, I want this.
Up until recently, I feel like we were still wearing the original, like, monster costumes from Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, like, definitely.
Talk about history and sweating inside a costume.
Yeah, the Chagall designs.
Yeah. Yes.
And, monster costumes.
And those were, you know, that was a case where you don't have an important name in it, but you do have years of other dancers' sweat in it, and they do become a little disgusting.
Disgusting, so, yeah. Disgusting and iconic all the same.
Yeah.
And it was like the last time we did it, which was a few seasons ago, I think, when we replaced all the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they were really... Plus, the construction sometimes, those are really heavy. And I just try to make things lighter because it works better for dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, this is random aside, but I remember wearing the monster fat suit costume and then having to do Symphony in C after that. And I just remember thinking, oh, I'm so warm because I had this,
yeah,
this
the body
fat suit.
Suit,
the bodysuit on, and it was so insulated. And
you
then
were
all I had to do,
sauna.
Yeah, I was moving as a monster in a sauna, and then all I had to do was put on point shoes and then put
and
on
you're
a
ready
tutu.
To go.
And I was ready because I was already sweating bullets.
Warmed up.
Yeah. But back to the costume shop, could you describe for us, like, what's the makeup of the costume shop? Who works there? How many are on your team? And what does the day-to-day look like?
Sure. Well, the costume shop physically is in the 8th floor of the Rose Building. We have a great shop full of huge windows that look out on the west side and the river, which is amazing. And we have a team of about 18 people that are stitchers, drapers, cutters, a fantastic dyer, painter, shop manager, shopper, and all of them... Well, a good deal of them have worked there for quite a long time. Some were there when Karinska was still on board, still alive, which is kind of amazing. And they bring with them, you know, all that knowledge of construction for dance, and especially tutu making and bodice making, which is so important and which I depend on them for. Because, as you know, Claire, I mean, when you get into a tutu and you put that bodice on, it's like if it's too boned and too stiff and too new, it just is, you're just like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I mean, the number of times I've been in fitting rooms saying, look, after one rehearsal, this is going to feel so much better. I realize right now it's a little stiff and uncomfortable, but it will loosen up. And our day-to-day there is basically just either revamping ballets that we're rebuilding the clothes for, building new ballets, which is always my preference, and then building costumes for second casts, costumes for people that are going in because of injuries. I mean, especially when you get to the end of a season like now, winter season this week, there's a lot of replacements and a lot of second casts, and it gets very busy with that. But fortunately, we are starting to wind down now. So
yeah, and talking about the different jobs that you guys do, could you explain the main differences between revamping a design from a ballet that has already been created, it's been on our rep, and creating something absolutely new?
Right. Well, revamping costumes is always a challenge because a lot of times, you know, the last time it was built was in the 70s or 60s. I mean, when we redid Midsummer Night's Dream, a lot of those costumes were 50, 60 years old. And, you know, they're made with fabrics that no longer exist, or color palettes change completely. Our color palettes today are nowhere near what they were in the 50s or 60s. So a lot of that is a challenge because we have to find fabrics that will replace the existing ones. And, you know, there again, you take into consideration the distance the audience is away, and stage lights, and hopefully you can find ways to, either through dyeing or layering, come up with something that looks as close as possible to the original. It's a challenge in that you're dealing with different proportions from dancers at that time to dancers mm-hmm. now. Our dancers now are much taller, and that's always, you know, that is a bit of a challenge there. I mean, for me, it is always more exciting, I think, when you have a new designer come in with a new ballet. As an example, Alexei coming in just now with my friend Moritz Jung to do Solitude was probably one of the highlights of my career, because it was just, you know, working with Alexei is just magic all the time. And he's one of those choreographers that I will basically do anything for. He's so sure about himself. He's so absolutely sure about his ballets. He loves his company. And, you know, I recognize that. And so I want to support him in any way I can. So that was just recently a very exciting time for us, doing the Clothes for Solitude, and then to see Solitude and just have it be so emotionally just incredible on stage, and to watch, you know, Alexei take real life and put it on our stage, I thought was, it's something you want art to do all the time. You hope it's going to do, so.
Yeah, and especially as a costume designer or director of the costumes, you, it's not, for ballet, it's not just seeing the beauty of the costume alone. It's seeing the beauty of the costume
through
in
the
ballet,
yeah.
Through the choreography, yeah. And like the meeting of the two, the movement plus
yeah.
the costume.
It, yeah.
So anyway, I can only imagine as like director of costumes, when you see the two go hand in hand so seamlessly, that's the most fulfilling experience.
That's when you
experience.
Sit, you sit back for a dress rehearsal and you're like, this was heaven.
Wow,
so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the shop, you don't only have designers come in, but you have had the chance to design things of your own for different ballets. What is it like to see your own designs come to life?
You know, it's a challenge. It's exciting. You know, it's something that you're walking out on a limb. You want it to be right for the dancers. You want it to be right for the ballet. I mean, especially when you're redesigning for a ballet. I mean, that is a massive challenge and also very intimidating. I mean, when Peter asked me to redesign Symphony in C, I remember, you know, sitting in his office and he said he thought it was time to have new costumes for that ballet. And I thought, oh, great, you know, sure. And then he said, and I think you should do it. And I thought, okay. And I remember walking across the plaza back to the Rose Building and thinking, oh my God, you know, I've just been asked to redesign one of the iconic Balanchine ballets that a lot of people are going to think, why? You know, and certainly there are those people out there in the ballet world that will look at Symphony in C and say, why? What was the point? You know, I think he just felt it was time to move on and freshen it up and maybe have a new look at it. And we went through a whole long process with that one. But it's very exciting, especially on that premiere when that curtain goes up and you see your clothes on stage. It's just incredibly fulfilling.
For the Symphony in C costumes, is it like a classical tutu or did you do the more powder puff tutu?
Right. It's a more powder puff.
It's more powder puff.
Because
that's the New York City ballet.
That's the New York City
signature.
Ballet.
And
yes.
Could you could you describe that tutu and why it's significant to
right.
New York City ballet?
Well, the powder puff tutu is something that Balanchine developed with Barbara Kurinska, who was his right-hand costume person for decades. And they developed something that was just a little less rigid. They got rid of the tutu wire, which is basically something that keeps it so flat and perpendicular to the body, makes it harder for the men to partner because there's that wire that's suddenly in their face, and just gives it a softer, kind of slightly sloping silhouette, which is, you know, basically what all of our tutu ballets are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very rare for us to have anything that has a wire in it.
Yeah, so it's like it's helpful for the partner. It's a soft, beautiful look.
Yeah.
Easy to move quickly and dynamically in for the lady.
Yeah. It's just a little less rigid and a little more poetic in some way, I think.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful silhouette.
It is beautiful. And it did, like, those tutus always felt really comfortable.
Right.
I mean, I guess more so than one that has the rigid wires in it and that's bigger on the outside.
Yeah.
Speaking of Kurinska, how do you view what you're doing now in relation to this legacy that Barbara Kurinska has left the company?
Well, it's something that I always have a challenge with because you're always working on costumes, for the most part, that she created. And, you know, we have a picture of her hanging in the costume shop that I always look at and I always think about her. And I always try to somehow think about how she made costumes and what her approach was. And hopefully emulate that in some way, because she was just such a, you know, she was a genius. And, you know, she ran the City Ballet Costume Shop for, like I said, decades and created some of the most beautiful ballet costumes that exist. So you try. somehow.
Yeah, and you tried, I guess, to, you know, take what was great about that, but then also do your own work, which I'm sure that that's just like a constant ebb and flow of like, oh, I feel like I'm doing it well, and then other times, I don't know, you dwell in the past or, and I, I don't mean to be speaking for you, but it's just, I think that's an artist's struggle.
Yeah,
right.
Of any age is like, how do you
live
draw
up to
inspiration from the past?
The ones have come before.
But you also have your own integrity as an artist.
Right, because you don't want to, and I think it's the same with, you know, dancers that are doing roles that were created by whoever. It's not like it should be an exact copy, because like with a dancer, you bring your own physicality to it and your own personality and your own body language to it. I mean, I think with costumes, it's like when we're doing new things, a lot of times I want to emulate Barbara Krinsica, but I don't want to copy her.
Yeah.
So it's a hard, it's a fine line. It's very hard.
Yeah, I think it's very similar for the dancing as well, to be inspired by those that have come before, but not intimidated or try to emulate, because, you know, that's them. They also don't want to be copied and have people do exactly like how they did it. Like, you wouldn't want someone after you to dance or design or recreate anything exactly like how you did it.
Right. Like, I think that, you know, a principal dancer in Symphony C wants to make that part kind of their own, regardless of who did it before them. I mean, they want to bring on that, everything about that part that was created on a previous dancer, but they want to bring their own kind of magic to it.
Yeah. So going back a little to talk about what are all of your jobs, you go beyond the costume shop. You're in charge of managing other departments as well in the theater.
Right. As a director of costumes, I oversee the shop. I oversee all the construction of the new costumes, old costumes. I also oversee our wardrobe department, our fabulous wardrobe departments, male and female, as well as the shoe department and hair and makeup. So it's big.
Yeah, to say the least.
And it is a lot of people to kind of, you know, keep track of. And especially right now, we're going through the whole budgetary thing for FY25 for the new season. And it's a real challenge then, because I have to basically work on budgets for all these departments.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's
the budget part is the least fun.
Yeah.
I would think, you know, it's like if we didn't have to do that.
It's so necessary.
But it is.
It's so not fun.
Yeah.
But you oversee some of the most iconic parts of dance, like the costume, the shoes.
The shoes,
and
the
hair and makeup.
So important.
It's like the most fun part.
Yeah. Yeah, those are fun. Budget, not so much.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your involvement with the Fall Fashion Gala?
The Fall Fashion Gala, a big project that was dreamed up by Sarah Jessica Parker and Peter Martins. And it was at the time when New York Fashion Week was here at Lincoln Center. Yeah, so they took over Damrosch Park. They moved it from Bryant Park to here briefly. And Sarah Jessica thought it would be really interesting to bring fashion into our company. And so she thought that what we should do is hire, at the time it was described to me as up-and-coming fashion designers to design ballets for new choreographers, which I thought was, you know, interesting. You know, I'm always game for a new idea. And then they came to me and said that the first one was going to be Valentino. And I was like, well, what's up and coming about Valentino? You know, but at the same time, I was like, okay, fashion icon, bring them on.
Yeah.
And in came Valentino to our costume shop, which was an incredible day. He would come in with his partner, Giancarlo, and he was very involved, I think, because he had retired from designing fashion. And so for him, it was a new, exciting project. And he loved the dancers. He loved being in the fitting room. He loved being in the costume shop. He would come in at about 11:30 every day, and I only had him till about 1:30 or 2 when he had to leave to go to lunch or something. Dressed to the T's and smelling amazing. And he was very hands-on. I loved working with him. And we had a great time, the first one. I remember during the summer before the fall, he would call me on my cell phone just to tell me, first of all, that he was on his boat which, you know, at the time I was, this is like too much information, but I was just like, yeah, Valentino, your boat is a 5-story yacht, so stop calling it a boat. And then he would call to tell me that, like, you know, instead of ruching the lace on the neckline of Megan Fairchild's bodice, it should be pleated. And then he would say, thanks, see you soon, bye. And it was just like, it was just so random. And why
sweet.
He was, you know, yeah. And
really sweet.
There he was in the Mediterranean on his yacht thinking about, you know, us. Aww. Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we went on for years. And it was very successful for the company. I think we didn't create a whole lot of ballets that, you know, we redo or that we bring back. But there are some that we do. And some great ballets came out of it. I, you know, have some great relationships that came out of it that I still am friends with quite a few designers to this day, which I love.
And yeah, no, a lot of like unique new costumes were made.
Yeah.
And I know that like in the past, even they've been the subject of museum exhibits.
Yeah.
And even most recently, a book, right? It's called New York City Ballet Choreography and Couture.
Right. After doing 10 years of this and working with 30 top-of-the-line designers, I just thought, you know, this would be something that would be good to get into a book so that people can see and people can hear from these designers and so on. And so I approached Rizzoli, and they were very on board immediately because it was something that for them is very exciting. They love to bring two art forms together. So the idea of bringing dance and fashion together was right up their alley. And so we worked for a good year or so on it. Well, I mean, I worked on it for about 4.5 years because...
I was about to say, that mm-hmm. would take a longer time than just a year.
Yeah, well, part of that also was the pandemic because mm-hmm. I got the go-ahead and then... I got the go-ahead on like March 6th mm-hmm. from the company...
Of 2020.
Yeah. And then on March 14th, we all went home.
Yeah.
So basically, I was at home at my house up the river for about a year and a half working on it, whatever I could do, you know, while we were closed down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back and started up with a vengeance.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I've seen some of the images, and I hope to buy one of the books.
Oh, yeah, it's
really striking images.
Book.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you've written some things in it,
yeah.
Like a foreword, or
yeah,
that's great.
As well as the dancers, I think they have also like
yes.
Yeah.
That
I look forward to reading that.
That was really important to me. Is that I wanted the voice of the dancers in it as well. So we got a lot of the dancers that were part of each of these ballets to give us quotes about what it was like to be in fittings, to work with these choreographers, and so on. So,
what's the costume shop? What are you working on now?
Well, I mean, I'm about to go back after this podcast recording to meet with our choreographer and fashion designer for the Fall Gala. I'm always working way ahead. So we're having a meeting about, you know, that, just a first one to find out if we're all going to play nicely together. It's always hard because you have to get a choreographer that sometimes is not so fashion
oriented.
Yes. To like suddenly say to them, okay, pick out a fashion designer because it's, you know, it's a new world. It's a different world for them. And so a lot of times for me, it's telling the choreographer to just go on Vogue.com or Style.com and start looking at, you know, I might give them a list of 10 names. Sarah Jessica used to give us a list of names and these are like suggestions. So go look at their websites and see if anything piques your interest. And if anything does, jot their name down or circle their name or something. So that's how we would usually come up with someone.
I would say as a choreographer, that would be just such an exciting prospect.
I know.
To say you get your pick of the crop.
Yeah.
Best fashion designers
yeah.
in the world, you get to pick one
yeah.
for your
I mean,
ballet.
We used to give them these lists of like, you know, Sarah Burton for Alexander McQueen, Carolina Herrera, Tom Ford. You know, it's just like went on and on and on. And sometimes these choreographers were like, really?
yeah, it's mind-blowing.
And you know, I would have them pick two or three because we would have to make the formal ask, which mm-hmm. Sarah Jessica would do because she's Sarah Jessica. Sometimes they would be immediately right on board. And sometimes we'd have issues because our fall gala does fall during New York Fashion Week, so mm-hmm. it's kind of hard for them at the same time. It's like asking them to design another
collection
as well as their other collections. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it can be sometimes a challenge, I imagine, to have all those intense choreographer, designer, sometimes the composer, lighting designer, all of that in one room, and you kind of sometimes in the middle of it trying to facilitate the coordination and the peace in the room for everyone when they want to really achieve everyone's vision.
Right.
What is that like?
Well, it's
as well as your own.
Right. Well, it's a big juggling act. Sometimes, you know, in one fall fashion gala film, I refer to it as like managing cats. And it's just like, you know, they're all running in different directions and they all want different things. And you have to kind of somehow bring it all together and make it all come together in one moment, especially one night. You know, it's just, and here it's just, you know, it is a challenge because, like, when I worked on Broadway, we would work on shows where you would have 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes a month of previews, where you're constantly working on it. And like, oh, that doesn't work. Let's take that out. Let's put this in. Oh, that doesn't work. Or a new song would go in, or a new dance number would go in, or whatever. And then after 2 or 3 weeks or a month, you would have that opening night. And then that's when the critics would come around that opening night. I mean, here it's just such a challenge because, you know, we're often doing these huge projects. You're hoping it's all going to come together in one night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your favorite part about being the director of costumes?
I thought about this. There's a lot of things. I mean, of course, I love when you first start out with a new choreographer and a new fashion designer. I mean, that's very exciting when you're working towards that. But I think that in the end, after I thought about all this, I mean, for me, it's being in a fitting room with our dancers and just getting their take on what is being built on them, how maybe they feel it can work better for them. That's, for me, is very exciting in working with a dancer and taking their, you know, suggestions or their opinions or how it can work better with their proportion. Or I just, that for me is really exciting. And then sitting out in the Koch Theater by myself a lot of times watching a dress rehearsal is like incredibly exciting because, you know, you're in this theater where there's going to be thousands of people that night, but there you are sitting by yourself watching a dress rehearsal. Mm. And it's, I remember one time watching a dress rehearsal of Symphony in C, and I just thought, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
This is where I want to be. This is super exciting.
Well, thank you, Mark, so much for joining us here on the podcast on
You're
the Rosin Box.
Welcome.
And good luck with all of your upcoming endeavors at the costume shop.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll see you at the shop later.
Yeah.
I love the skirt.
Thank you.
Great.
This is it's my summer skirt, but I make it a winter skirt.
The things that you do. The things that you pulled out of your head. Fashion, fabrics.